Why have I always got to be the one to forgive those idiots? Why have I always got to be the one to say I'm sorry? Why have I got to pray for my enemies? Why have I got to bless those that wrongfully and despitefully use me? Why? I'm tired of it. I ain't doing it no more. I quit. It ain't fair. I'd really like to tell that sucker how I really feel. And he thinks he's bad. I'd like to show him bad. I'd like to be unsaved for about 5 minutes. You ever feel like that? The Bible is full of men and women that felt like that. Elijah felt like that. Sitting out there by the brook, Cherith, having a pity party. I'm the only one left. Jonah felt like that. Out of the depths of hell, he cried out to God. I'd like to read from Numbers chapter 11 tonight about another man, a great man, one of the great men of the Bible, Moses. He felt like that. And we want to look at these scriptures and see why he felt like that. And I'll bet you, you can relate to them. You can identify with it. But thank God he stayed with the stuff. Numbers chapter 11. I seldom title a message, but this one is called, "That's It, I Quit." Now when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. So the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the on the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. So he called the name of that place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord had burned among them. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense cravings, so that the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons, the leeks and onions and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes." Now the manna was like coriander seed, and it looks its color like the color of bdellum. Coriander, by the way, I looked it up. It's a herb. It's a strong-smelling herb, but has a fruit-like flavoring. And some of you cooks probably knew that, but I didn't. Verse 8, "The people went about and gathered it, ground it into millstones or beat it with the mortar, cooked it in pans and made cakes of it. And its taste was like the taste of pastry prepared with oil. And when the dew fell on the camp in the night, the manna fell on it." Then Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, everyone at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused. And Moses also was displeased. One translation says discouraged. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you afflicted your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight, that you have laid the burden of all these people on me? Do I receive all these people or conceive all of these people? Did I beget them that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all these people? For they weep all over me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I am not able to bear all these people alone because the burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, please kill me here and now. If I have found favor in your sight, do not let me see my wretchedness. So the Lord said to Moses, gather to me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people, and officers over them. Bring them to the tabernacle of meeting, that they may stand there with you. Then I will come, talk down, and talk with you there. I will take of the spirit that is upon you, and I will put the same upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with you, that you may not bear it yourself alone. Then you shall say to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, who will give us meat to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you say, and you shall eat. You shall eat not one day. Now pay attention to this. You got to be careful what you ask for. And you shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but for a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have displeased the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, why did we ever come out of Egypt? And Moses said, the people whom I am among are 600,000 men on foot, yet you have said, I will give them meat that they may eat for a whole month. Shall the flocks and herds be slaughtered for them to provide enough for them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together to them to provide enough for them? And the Lord said to Moses, has the Lord's arm been shortened? Now you shall see whether what I say will happen to you or not. So Moses went out and he told the people the words of the Lord, and he gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tabernacle. And then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to them and took of the spirit that was upon them and placed the same upon the 70 elders. And it happened when the spirit rested upon them that they prophesied, although they never did so again. I want to stop right there. What is it that had Moses at the point of frustration, disgust, discouragement? Well, let's look. First of all, in verse 5 and 6, Moses had a people problem. Isn't it amazing how so many of our problems in life have to do with people? People. You ever find a perfect church, you've heard it said there won't be anybody there. Because if there's one person there, it ain't perfect. But Moses had a people problem. They up there griping and belly aching about, who's going to give us the meat? We remember when we had all that fish and melons and cucumbers and garlic. We had all the good stuff, even while we was in slavery. And you know, there's an old saying that I used, I don't know where I got it, but he used to talk about my sister-in-law. Well, I mean, she'd gripe if you hung her with a new rope. Not Debbie, not this sister-in-law. You know people like that? That no matter what, it's, well, but, yeah. People. Jesus is aware and had to deal with people. Don't you know that he felt frustrated when he sat down and he looked over Jerusalem and he says, Oh, Jerusalem. How often would I have gathered you together as the hen doth her brood, but you would not. See, the Lord went about everywhere doing good. Yet he was despised. He was rejected. He was spit upon. He was betrayed. He was forsaken. He was sold. He was unjustly convicted. Don't let people do to you what it did to Moses. Secondly, we see in verse 4 where Moses had a provision problem. They asked there in verse 4, who will give us meat to eat? Where's the meat going to come from? We're tired of this manna. Manna, 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 manna in the morning, morning, manna in the evening, manna at supper time. Manna, manna, manna. We want some meat. Preferably beef, medium. He had a provision problem. You ever encounter a provision problem? You know, there's a country song wrote several years ago. I don't remember who sang it, but one of the lyrics went, there's too much month at the end of the money. I can tell y'all have never had that problem. Too much month at the end of the money. Shoot. I used to get paid on Friday and be broke Saturday morning. And wonder where in the world it went. Y'all been there, some of you. Glenn, did you ever steal any of that money? Okay. Provision problem. Thirdly, we see where he had a personal problem in verses 10 and 11, where it talked about him being displeased. I believe it's the King James says he was discouraged. This is what I want to talk to you a little bit about tonight, is about discouragement. I've tried to intermittently inject this since we built this church. One of the devil's favorite tools is to cause you to have feelings of what? Hopelessness. And that starts with discouragement. If he can get you discouraged, then you'll begin to feel like your situation, your problem is hopeless. And when you feel like it's hopeless, you can't have faith. Because faith is the substance of things what? Hoped for. The evidence of things not seen. So guard your mind. Guard your mind. Guard your heart. Be careful what you allow and you entertain in your mind, because what you entertain in your mind will get in your heart. And once something gets into your heart, that's what you become. That's what you speak. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Be careful. Be careful, very careful about allowing discouragement to come in. Well, how do you stop that? A lot of ways. Bible talks about bringing captive every thought and see if it be of the Lord. When those thoughts of discouragement and hopelessness begin to come, you better get a hold of those. I assure you, those thoughts start. Thoughts are not from God. You see, any thought that is condescending or condemning or negative and putting you down, that's not from God. The devil wants you to have those feelings of hopelessness. So get control of your thought process. Get control of it so that it doesn't get into your heart. Guard your heart. Then we see what he did after that. Verse 14 and 15. He confesses his weakness. Man, we got to learn from this. Verse 14, he says, I am not able to bear all these people alone, because the burden is too heavy for me. I want you to know, I understand that. Many of you understand that. When God called me to build this place, which was something that most of you know the story, I never wanted to do. I never wanted to pastor. I still don't want to pastor. I'm being honest. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm being honest. I don't want a pastor. But I do want God's will in my life. And I know that this is what he told me to do. And he's confirmed it time and time again with miracle after miracle after miracle of how he provided the things that we needed in the lives that have been and are being changed weekly. It's amazing. It's amazing. Only God can do what we've seen him do. I'm not smart enough to have connived a plan to schemed all of this up. But I reached a place, and I'll share this part of the story, and then I'll close. In fact, for those of you who don't know, I had come in off the rodeo trail and wore out, fell asleep, laying on my right side. God woke me up. When I woke up, I was wide awake immediately, laying on my right side. There's a hand came down out of the dark, and blood started dripping off of that hand. Then another hand did like that, and there was a little flicker of fire. And then it was like a cloud face. That's not a real accurate description, but that's the best I can do. And it went, and that little flicker of fire became a huge fireball in my room. I could feel the heat off of it. The whole room lit up, and it was gone. The first vision I ever had, and I'm sure glad it was a vision because old men dream dreams. Young men see visions. I got up, walked out on my front porch, me and that blue healer dog, and I sit down there, and I knew I'd had a spiritual experience, but I didn't know what it meant. And I said, Lord, what are you trying to say? And it's like turning on a video camera. Here it came again, but this time standing right behind me on the right side, I heard an audible voice interpret the vision. And it says, soon many will come that need the cleansing of my blood, and there's more than enough for all that come. He said, even now the fire of my spirit burns in your midst, but I'm about to breathe on you, and you're going to see things you've only dreamed of and prayed about. And it left. Well, within 2 weeks' time, God began to deal with me about this place. I pulled a Jonah. I ran for 2 months. I ran, and he dealt with me every day, every day. And the harder I ran, the louder he got. Finally, I said, okay, I'll do it. But we got to have an understanding here, Lord. Shreveport Bossier doesn't need just another building. They don't need just another church. We've got plenty of those. We need if you're not going to be in the middle of it, changing people's lives, if you're not going to be delivering them from habits, restoring their marriages, saving their businesses, cleansing their sins, if you're not going to be in the middle of it, involved in lives, I don't want to do this. Secondly, I'm not going to be a bum. I'm not going to be the kind of preacher when people see me coming, they start going, oh God, I wonder what he wants now. Your word says that you supply all of our needs according to your riches in glory. And if you don't supply it, we must not need it. We pray about what we need. This is my philosophy. You want to know why we don't ask you for more stuff? Now, I do want to challenge you to have a hearing ear and listen to what God says, okay? Bible says for me to let my needs and requests be made known unto God. He already knows. But he wants me to talk to him about it. And as I talk to him about it, he'll begin to speak to people. Did you know about between 75 and 80% of the money, Duke will verify this, about 75 and 80% of the money that it took to build this place came from outside of the state of Louisiana by people that have never been here? That have never been here because God spoke to them and they did what he... I'll give you an example. Cowboys driving down the road. They were going from the East Coast to Fort Worth. They called, wanted to know what exit they got off on to come to this church. They'd heard about it out on the rodeo circuit. They happened to be at exit 5. I says, exit 3, your next exit. Get off, turn left over the interstate, go to the light, make a right. We're a half mile roughly. They come pulling up in here. Living quarters trailer on the road making a living. They'd hit them really good. And they walk in here and write a $10,000 check. Headed on to a rodeo. Y'all know that that man that we led to the Lord over in Tunica, Mississippi, he and his now wife, it was a fiance at the time, put on a rope and down in South Texas to help us raise money. It was called Raise the Roof Roping. They raised $14,400 at a roping. They began to pay those cowboys off their winnings, and they began to hand $100 bills to us, $100 bills to us. Got it up to $17,700. Lady out in the parking lot leaned up against the Cadillac Escalade by herself, crying. I drove up. I said, "Ma'am, are you okay?" She said, "I've never been better in my life." I'm thinking, well, what are you doing standing out here crying? She said, "I've never been better in my life." She said, "I was in that church service you just preached in there." She said, "God spoke to me clearer than I've ever been spoken to." And she pulled out a check out of her pocket. It was folded. She says, "Please, mister, don't say a word. Just take it and leave. Just take it and go." It was a check for $80,000. I'm on my way in from down there. This was the other side of Waco, a place called Hamilton, Texas. I'm on my way in from there to get a phone call from a man in Carthage that I'd met one time. Asked me, could I come by his office? Said, "I'll be there in a couple of hours." I go by and he said, "My son, since he's been coming to your Bible studies at your home, is a different man. And he tells me you're building a cowboy church over there and I want to help." He stuck a check out. Well, you know, cowboys stand there with their thumbs in their pocket like we're not supposed to. But I was standing there like this, and I started to take that check. My thumb will not come out of my pocket, Cindy. I thought, whoa. The Spirit of the Lord said, "I tell you what, I'll take that check on one condition." He literally took a step back and he says, "What do you mean you'll take my check on one condition? What the hell is that?" And I says, "If when we get it built, if you'll come." About 6'5", 300 pounds, he dropped in his chair behind his seat and began to cry and weep. And I led him to the Lord right there. Get in the truck and go down the road. The check was for $50,000. That weekend, God gave us $147,700 to go on this place. That's my God. That's my God. Go take it to the Lord in prayer and give Him time to work. When we have a hearing ear, God will speak to us as to what we should do. And you've been really good about that, and I want to thank you for that. We don't have a massive bank account, but everything's paid. We don't owe anything, and we're able to bless people with helping with insulin and lights and things of those nature that need to be done. Amen. So he confessed his weakness. Then in verse 18, we see where the Lord provided. They ate so much quail, they were sick of it. It run out their nostrils is what he said. My point to you that I'm trying to make tonight. All of us will be confronted from time to time with discouragement and the feelings of futility and the feelings of just feeling like quitting. But I want you to know, the only way you lose is if you quit fighting the fight of faith. As long as you fight that fight of faith, you will come through. You may have gone through some tests, but you're going to have some testimonies. You may go through some fires, some trials. It's working for your good. It's working for your good. I was sharing with the staff, I think it was this morning, it might have been yesterday morning. Romans 8 talks about that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord and called according to His purposes. Learn to think of that verse like this, that nothing's happening to me as a child of God. It's happening for me. It's helping me to become refined, true, proven by fire. It's helping me to get the rough edges off. It's helping my faith to grow, my trust in the Lord, my perception of the God that I serve. It's helping me to have a better understanding of Him and it will you too. Would you bow your heads?